Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. This show is also sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org as well as RepublicReview.org, and this is the only show on the air in any medium, in any fashion, that actually provides you the academic and evidence-based solutions of what it's going to take to save our Constitution and our Republic. That's one of the reasons why we go through the materials we go through, and that's one of the reasons why we ask, and hopefully we're working with you in changing your paradigms. That way, we can become successful, because it's only through paradigm changes that we can actually invoke the changes we need. This is why we're asking you to read Washington's proclamation to the nation for a day of Thanksgiving. It was the nation's first Thanksgiving in 1789. And it was after it was in the first year and the first session of Congress that Washington had proclaimed this. And I get into the details, and I'm going to rebroadcast my reading and the information regarding our first Thanksgiving. So if you can't find it, you can't read it, just play my show for your family. And you can actually download the podcast in advance. And so what we ask is that you at least share this message, because then your family will start realizing that Thanksgiving is not about pilgrims and gorging. We've got more marketing that we're going to get into today, which is why we've kind of cut down some of the lead-in monologues and so forth. What we want to do is just kind of plow forward and give you the information necessary so that we can become successful in getting you, one, engaged and doing what we need done. That's the only reason I go through the news. The news is just a distraction, right? When you go to work, there's all sorts of distractions, and none of it is getting your job done. Our job is to actually act in getting the state legislatures to do their job. That's why I went through last week my three premises, so that you understand how I function and how, if we all function together, we will send a very clear, concise, and succinct message that we want and demand compliance to the Constitution. So, with that, let me just kind of dive forward. By the way, in our next episode, we will be diving into the hyphenated American, which Prince Teddy had penned and had asserted. And it's interesting that here we are a century later, and we're in that exact same position of the hyphenated American be divided to the degrees that we are. Now, the one thing I do want to remind you is that we do have our call-in line, 605-562-4209. I give it to you every day. And until we actually blow up that phone number, I'm going to continue to give it to you every day. And then eventually, who knows, we're working into being into a position where we have to give you three different numbers, because there's that many people calling and listening so that they can get the message. So anyway, let me kind of move forward real quick. You know, we have Red State Coffee. We would be honored and humbled if you purchased Red State Coffee, and give us a call, as a matter of fact, and let us know what you think. Just keep in mind that Red State Coffee is supporting this show. And by your supporting this show instead of the progressives, because if you look at the majority of the coffee companies out there that you're probably buying and drinking, they're only pushing the progressive agenda down your throat. I have no idea why you feel like you have to be loyal to the communist agenda, but it's time we start shifting our paradigms. If you haven't read that article, maybe instead of going out and shopping for a great deal on Black Friday, maybe what you want to do is actually look at reading some of these articles and getting smart. Who knows? You might learn something. You might not. We don't know. But anyway, one of the things that we want to get into, and so we're going to dive into, and look, we're halfway through this segment, and we're going to start diving into what we had talked about yesterday or in our previous episode. Now, the first thing I said was that you have to understand that DACA is unconstitutional because this story from G. Edward Griffin is about DACA. So I'm just trying to set this, frame this for you, that DACA is unconstitutional. It does not follow the laws on the books. It is about enforcement and how the executive, President Obama, chose to enforce the law. And in doing so, he did it unconstitutionally. So how do you feel about Trump doing the same thing and trying to pander to those DACA recipients? Even though he has come out and actually said that, some of these guys, some of the DACA people are hardened criminals. But he still vows to make a deal with Democrats to let them stay in the United States. So, I don't know. I'm just putting it out there to let you kind of do this self-analysis and how you feel really about that. Because I know there's lots of people that love President Trump. I support our president. I'm thankful that he is doing things to counter what the evil presidents before him have done, but he's not doing enough, nor does he have the authority to do what it takes. That's how we kind of, severed things in our previous episode. Anyway, the mainstream media reported that the Supreme Court seemed likely to shut down the deferred action for childhood arrivals, or the DACA program. The federal scheme that has allowed nearly 800,000 young people, known as Dreamers, to live and work in the U.S., protecting them from deportation. President Trump tweeted that he would strike a deal with Democrat lawmakers to allow DACA recipients to stay in the United States if the Supreme Court eliminates the Obama-era initiative. In other words, they actually decide to follow the Constitution. His promise to allow the Dreamers to stay goes against his campaign promise to his base in the 2016 election to deport them. And about 8% of the DACA recipients have criminal records. 8%. So that's actually kind of a high percentage, right? I mean, if we had 8%, let me just pull up a calculator, right? And how many people do we have in America? Well, best guess, it would be 330 million, right? And so we times that by 8, and that would be 264. What is that? So that would be 2.64 million. That's a lot. I mean, how many people do we have in jail incarcerated? I mean, that's a lot of people.
That's 26,400,000. My bad, not 2.64.
26 million. That's more than what we have, I think, already incarcerated. That's these people are, out walking around. When I say these people, criminals that are out walking around, they tend to be, re-repeaters and so forth. This actually begs the conversation of what do we need to do to change to actually have criminal reform. We have to stop. We have to stop mollycoddling people and saying, we're going to give you an early out because we just can't afford to keep you in there. First off, it shouldn't be that expensive. It should not be that expensive. If we have to start outsourcing and shipping these criminals outside the United States to live in a godforsaken place and be treated by people that have no respect for them, that's okay. You've gotten into that position possibly because you deserved it, right? And anybody that there is a shadow of a doubt should be in America in the system of appeals or what have you. But if the evidence prevails, and there's ways we can even go down this path of, okay, this conviction was a circumstantial conviction. In other words, there was no eyewitnesses. It was all circumstantial. And so going down some of these paths, we would want to make sure that those types of cases, you know, we'll let them stay here, because we have to work to actually, you know, I think we have to raise our bar in convictions. There's way too many There's way too many criminals who weren't really criminals, and DNA and other things have actually been able to get them out. And we shouldn't be incarcerating people that shouldn't be incarcerated. But if you've committed a crime and you're guilty of that crime and it is irrefutable, then those folks we need to ship out, because that way it's cheaper, my friends. I mean, pennies on the dollar compared to what we're spending here. Now, I will tell you that the unions will protest that. No, no, no. We've got to take care of them here because we've got pensions involved in all of this. And maybe we may want to have to send those, you know, our own prisoner, or I should say correctional officers. Maybe we want to actually, you know, send them out just like we do with the military and have them, you know, them guard them and so forth. We have to at least have to start having these conversations of how do we turn around our penal system so that we actually have people that don't want to commit the crime, because it's not a nice place to go when you commit crime. Anyway, we've got a promo. We'll be right back after this. Thank you so much. Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue.
Anyway, I know I kind of went down this rat hole, but the whole point is when you have 8% of a group of people, a very specific group of people, a cultural group of people, and you already got 8% of them that are hardened criminals, that might be an indictment towards that culture. Might be. Because in context to America, 8% of our population, like I said, that'd be 26.4 million people that would be hardened criminals. And so I think the point is that, you know, first off, obviously we do have to have a good, open, and honest dialogue and put everything on the table regarding what is it going to take to actually remove, you know, or reduce crime down to a, you know, a reasonable number again. And I think one of the best ways to do that is actually make it so unattractive. Let people understand, hey, you know, you're not entitled to an education. You're not. You have committed crimes against society. We do not owe you anything because you made that choice. Now, I'm just here to tell you, when you actually enable bad behavior, that's exactly what you'll get. You'll get more bad behavior. So you have to do things to change those outcomes. Now, a lot of people in this next story, G. Edward Griffin talks about Uber, and some people call, you know, companies like Uber a high-tech company. I don't think it's a high-tech company. It's basically, it is a nationwide taxi cab company. And instead of using the standard process of creating a business itself, all you've got to do is become an independent contractor and work with Uber. Now, I'm not sure if Uber, I'm sure they filed in every state where they operate, in every country where they operate. But I'm not sure that there's necessarily all the revenues coming in. I am constantly finding evidence that these companies, they're like Facebook. Facebook is not a technology company. It's a company that uses technology, just like every other company. But they're just providing a social media platform. That's not high tech. High tech to me is companies that are making the computer systems to take us to the next level, introducing technology. And when you're talking about just a platform and just offering like a software, is software high tech? No, it's just software. Anyway, back to Uber. I just want to let you know that Uber and G. Edward Griffin, more importantly, wants to let you know that they are actually out to stick it to the American people. Uber fired over 1,000 workers since July, but the government has approved hundreds of H-1B foreign worker visas for Uber, and they will replace American workers. Now, we're not talking about drivers. We're actually talking about the people that are working at Uber. From 2009 to 2014, the F1 optional practical training program replaced 500,000 American jobs with foreign students who studied in the United States and stayed in the country after graduation for employment. Why? Because they know that these kids are going to be cheaper than, and this goes down to that conversation I've had regarding engineers in high-tech companies where I've worked. When you get older, you become more expensive because guess what? Every year you get your stipend increase, right? And so your increase may be only 3%, but over time, that actually accounts to a lot. And by the time you're in your 50s, you're making some big bucks. Here's the problem. You possess a lot of information. You possess a lot of domain knowledge and those types of things. But is that more critical? Those tidbits that you possess, is it more critical to, you know, keep you and pay you that much more money, or to bring somebody in at half the salary and have them just do work that's capable of doing the basic work in that domain without all the domain knowledge? And over time, they will obtain the domain knowledge, customer knowledge, and so forth. And we're reaching that critical point in the employment and in the tech industry to where it is easier to accommodate and or overcome that wisdom, domain knowledge, and so forth. And that's why I tell people you have to actually start really constantly retooling and looking how you can bring more to the company and be a greater value to the company. Because what I knew a guy that worked for me that did not want to retire, and he felt he was entitled to his job. That's the wrong paradigm, especially in a tech industry. I told this young man, old man actually, he was much older than I was, but I told him that he needed to start retooling so that he could support different platforms. But instead, what he did was he just ignored me because he thought for sure that he would be able to maintain his employment. And I'm here to tell you that companies do not owe you this work. I also want you to understand that companies are looking at their bottom line. Here's the question. If Uber was not a publicly traded company, they probably wouldn't be where they are today. And where they are today is they're chasing their bottom line and counting and have a bean counter, counting to the degree of, you know, how much money does it take for us to continually make a profit? Or, you know, what do we need to do to trim our costs to make sure that we can make more profit to, you know, increase our value to our stakeholders, to our stockholders? And bottom line, there are all sorts of problems with one publicly traded companies like this, as well as the tech industry, as well as especially, and this is a whole different problem or dynamic to this problem, H-1 visas, H-1B foreign worker visas. And I'm here to tell you that it's nice to be able to let people come here, and it's great that we have people coming here that can get jobs, but we need to make sure that we're bringing people here not to actually unemploy Americans, all of them, but to make sure that we're only injecting so much. Because I'm telling you, companies, the way their business model is, they will do everything they can to retool or to replace as many people as they possibly can. Government, though, has the responsibility of the immigration standards. And so when they immigrate people and they unemploy people by the exact same actions of immigrating them, then we are no longer being represented by our government. So government has to come up with a mechanism of controlling that floodgate of allowing people to come in that can actually create a good, healthy, competitive environment instead of an unhealthy competitive environment. Because as we know, corporations will do everything they can to get ahead and to, you know, to make their stock worth more. So you can't be surprised that Uber's doing this, and you can't be surprised that the government is doing this. We are no longer being represented. And I guess the real point and the thing you need to take home with this or on this is the governments, or I should say corporations, have more pull with your government, and it's your government, than you do. That's why you need to start getting engaged in your state and local levels, because if we get the government to comply to the Constitution, then most of these problems go away, because they won't be able to actually provide these types of visas without, you know, answering to you. But right now, they don't have to answer to you based on the representations. We can get into this, but it comes right down to, do we have the appropriate representation per the Constitution? And I'm telling you, we don't. If you look at the Constitution, every 30,000 citizens are supposed to be represented by one congressman, one representative. Instead, we have almost a million people being represented. We are tremendously underrepresented. And so I just want to kind of plant that seed in your mind that almost all of our problems, whether they be these H-1B visas, whether they be agriculture, whether they be the Second Amendment, healthcare, it doesn't matter, abortion, all of these things are problems because the government is not complying to the Constitution. Now, let me also say this. This is something that Edward Griffin also adds to the story. He says, employers received a tax subsidy that made it cheaper to hire foreigners. Now, so Why is it that they're doing this? They're no longer representing you. When migrants replace U.S. workers, American students suffer. Social Security and Medicare get cheated. Corporates get cheap labor. And universities get control over immigration policies. Both Democrats and Republicans support the loss of American jobs and the turning over of America to the globalist society. So you have to understand what are all the consequences that are occurring in just this one little chasm, in just this one little aspect, right? So the point is that these problems, even these little problems, H-1B visas, go away when we start getting compliance to the Constitution. That's why we're motivating you here. That's why we go through these stories. So we'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our Constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, health care, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities and powers that belong to the states, is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review. So please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to reclaimingtherepublic.org and go to the contribution page, and you can become a listed supporter of liberty. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
Okay, so this next story is kind of a double hand or double palm plant of the face. I just don't get it. How does this happen? How is it the terrorists and their activist kids can get away with crap like this? But I digress. Let me just tell you the story as J. Edward Griffin reports it, and you can start wondering what the heck is wrong with California. And hopefully, if we don't get active and start actually taking action, this is going to be the paradigm throughout this republic. So as you wonder how this happens, let me tell you what's happened. G. Edward Griffin reports that the parents of Chesse Boudin, a San Francisco's new prosecuting district attorney, are David Gilbert and Kathy Boudin, the infamous Weather Underground Organization terrorists who went to prison for the murder of two police officers and a Brinks armored car guard. Now, I get it that everybody pays their crime. Remember, we talked about the problems with our penal system and the fact that, you know, we're just not doing enough anymore in, you know, in de-incentivizing people from doing things. And here is another great example of this. As Griffin goes on to say, Mr. Griffin goes on to say, David Gilbert is still in prison while Kathy Bodin, who through an early release from prison, and many like her Weather Underground terrorist comrades, is a university professor. Chessie Bodin, or Bodin, 39, was raised by Weather Underground radical communists Bill Ayers and Bernine Dorn after his biological parents were sentenced to prison. So you got to understand that this kid is now being wired by radicalism throughout their life. And oh my gosh. So Chessie has now won the race, his or her, I don't know what the gender, it doesn't matter. I don't know whether this individual, I just know this, that they're now a district attorney in the city of San Francisco, okay? And so it is clear that this Chessie Bodin is fully committed to bringing the communist revolution to America and is following the Soros template for criminal justice reform. Oh, as he now reports that the gender is he. I guess I should have read this before. I knew this was a good story, but anyway. So here's this guy, this child of these two terrorists, both went to jail, raised by Bill Ayers, becomes a lawyer, and has now been elected as the district attorney for San Francisco, who is committed to communist reform. How is it that this person actually won this election, understanding that their parents and him not being an acorn that has not fallen far from the tree and has been ideologically wired? Why did the San Francisco even allow this person? Why did they even consider him? So anyway, he plans to actually go through a criminal justice reform and to close jails and eliminate cash bail. The cornerstone of his campaign is to sabotage the immigration enforcement. And they're repeating the exact same failed policies and failed paradigms that are impacting people's lives. I mean, people are dying, people are being raped, people are being victimized because of these idiots. But they're not idiots, my friends. They may be doing really stupid things, but these things that they're doing are designed for one outcome. The ends justify the means, and they do not care about what you have to suffer. If you have to die, that's okay, because the ends justify the means. That's how they think. So anyway, he's refusing to prosecute and or work with ICE and police officers for doing their job. Mr. Bodin's ties to Soros include his top financier, Chloe Cokeburn, who hosted Soros' 2017 summit on the DA takeover strategy. This summit was this huge strategy plan that they presented to Soros to invest into all of these district attorneys. Now, here's a guy that has to raise his arm to uphold the Constitution. He has to take an oath, and he is going to deliberately not enforce the laws of the land and is actually going to try to put in policies that are contrary or direct conflict with our Constitution. This is all being done, and this was all supported by this organization you probably heard of, the Tides Foundation, and the Brennan Center also backed Bodin. So here's the thing. I keep on telling you, it's all about compliance to the Constitution. When this guy starts violating the Constitution, because I'm telling you, the federal government trumps states when it comes to immigration. It's very clear. And if you don't understand that, reach out and contact me. Go read Jefferson's Resolution of 1798. Right there, he says that it isn't until 1808 where the states lose their ability to control immigration. In the Constitution, the federal government has full control over immigration. whether you like it or not. That is their primary constitutional role, and they're supposed to set uniform standards, and we, the states, have to abide by them. So these things that he's doing, he's violating the Constitution, and he should be thrown in jail for committing treason, because here he's being an officer of the court that is actually rebelling against a public officer, and he's actually rebelling against the United States Constitution. There's got to be consequences to this, my friends. If we do not start acting and demanding, because I'm telling you, red states should be going after these people. They should be actually charging them with, you know, treason and or moral perjury. We've got to start using the Constitution as our weapon, period. Anyway, do you remember Mr. Marshall? I reported on him in an episode last week. He was the person that got punched in the face, you know, violently by a police in a brouhaha over, you know, a bunch of rebel rousers in the subway system that were, you know, not paying their fair share for the fare that they're getting on the subway. Anyway. So here's another stupid, idiotic plan that is coming out of the mayor's office. And the New York City, under plans to hand out Mets baseball tickets, movie tickets, and I know you've heard about this, subway passes and various store gift cards to offenders as an incentive to get them to show up to their scheduled court hearings. The city's so-called criminal justice reforms go into effect on January 1st, 2020. These offenders, who are basically misdemeanor offenders, will be released without cash bail for, like I said, most misdemeanor charges and multiple felony charges as well, including criminally negligent homicide, drug sales, aggravated assault on a child, and burglary. A critic noted that those who are accused of serious offenses are free to roam the streets or even rewarded with gifts while the rights of victims are being ignored. I said this before. Government has two objects. They have two primary responsibilities. That is to protect life and to protect property. And when they start protecting those who are assaulting and violating life and property, and they're giving them greater credence, giving them greater, what's a good word for it? I mean, they are empowering them. They're empowering the criminals to commit crimes against you. How is it that this is okay? How is it that this even becomes a conversation in our constitutional republic, a land that is based on the rule of law? How is it? It doesn't make any sense unless it starts making sense that these are tools to be used for you to be focused on so that you can get involved in trying to fight this distraction. Once we start focusing in the dark red states and getting them demanding compliance and getting one state to call for republic review, that state to be, our best hope is with Wyoming. I've said this time and time again. If we can get Wyoming to be David to stand up against Goliath, we have a great shot in winning. We have a great shot in getting where we need to be. So anyway, I just want you to know that as insane as these things are getting, it's not going to get any better. And as a matter of fact, I don't have any time to get into this next story regarding the U.S. Supreme Court, but we're going to get into this because it's not about the story itself. It's about compliance. And I want you to understand that every single one of these stories, it is about compliance with the Constitution. We would not be in these situations if our government, if our public officers, our servants were complying to the Constitution, period. Almost every single one of our problems go away when they have to comply. And shoot, why do they have to do anything different? They don't have to comply now until we demand that they do. So help us by helping you, and we'll be right back after this.
Are you a patriotic proprietor of a business that is looking to get exposure on a fast-growing program? How would you like to get exposure on the only program on the air that provides an actual constitutional solution to all the federal government overreach and encroachments? If you understand the importance of educating the electorate, we would love to work with you in growing your business and revenues while you support the airing of our content on this station. Your support goes to growing the reach of this show and does not pay for elaborate salaries or highfalutin lifestyles. The show is growing fast, and we're also planning on airing the content about Republic Review on a video medium soon. If you'd like to be a part of history and the growth of the most relevant and result-oriented show on the air anywhere in the world, then just email me at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can lock in exceptional pricing and great advertising opportunities. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255.
Okay, so I know a lot of people have been talking about this, and we're going to actually cover it for maybe a different reason. Maybe a different reason than other people. The U.S. Supreme Court, as you know, has let stand a groundbreaking ruling from the Connecticut Supreme Court that said the families of the victims may sue Remington, the manufacturer of the Bushmaster AR-15-style rifle that was used in the 2012 Sandy Hook Elementary School shooting event. A federal law, though, protects gun makers from liability for the bad acts committed by a third-party purchaser. And so, what is the Supreme Court doing? And as a matter of fact, why is it that the Supreme Court has failed to step in and say, hey, you can't do this. There's a law that prevents these types of things from happening. However, the Connecticut Supreme Court's decision allowed plaintiffs to go after the gun manufacturer, claiming the weapons were marketed and advertised as military-style arms to civilians to kill their enemies. The NRA has argued that allowing victims and their families to sue manufacturers is a costly, unfair way to penalize the gun makers for crimes committed by others. It is a step toward ending the manufacturing of guns for consumers or for the public use. And so here's the thing. The fact that the federal government has created a law that keeps people from being able to sue gun manufacturers is because in America, you should be free. And we talked about this last week that, you know, anybody can sue anybody. You can go into court and you get a lawyer and so forth. The problem with our justice system isn't necessarily, you know, this, you know, easy access, that there are no consequences for frivolous lawsuits and a waste of court time and a waste of taxpayer money. Why is it that the court system can't take a fiduciary responsibility of saying, look, you know, we should be good stewards of the money that we receive? It's almost like the courts believe they're entitled to spend anything and continue to be bogged down with cases so that they can continue to grow and let the rest of their lawyer buddies become, you know, judges in a grander court system. It's all about, it's the concept of allowing organizational growth. It goes to the whole point of why I do not want to be a nonprofit organization creating this huge organizational structure. Just be streamlined, be a profit base. I don't have to worry about, you know, anything if I don't account for 5 cents or because something doesn't, the government will descend upon a nonprofit, especially a conservative nonprofit organization. And I mean, you're in their sights, literally with a weapon, and they will come and rain down upon you all sorts of problems if you have any improprieties within your nonprofit or, you know, operations. So with regard to this whole thing, why is it that the Supreme Court is stepping aside, or even why is it that the federal government has these laws? Bottom line is that when you read the First Amendment, it doesn't say that, you know, what's the best way to put it? Because let me just pull it right up. The best way to put this is that what the First Amendment does not say that you can create these laws, because the whole point is that these are the amendments are nugatories. In other words, you can't even create laws to interfere with these things. And so that's why it says in the First Amendment, Congress shall make no law, but actually that should be the federal government shall make no law, rule, regulation, or anything respecting an establishment of religion, blah, 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 right? And it's the same thing with the Second Amendment. The federal government should not make any laws respecting or, you know, governing any of these things. Because, and what it says in the Second Amendment very specifically, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Because you have to understand, that's why the article that I wrote it the way I did. We talk about an organized and an unorganized militia. What do you do when even your militia gets corrupt? Well, the last bastion is we the people. And it goes right down to our Declaration of Independence. Whenever, based on a train of abuses and violations, we have a right to put aside our government and stand up anew if necessary. And that's the fundamental rights and why we have these First Amendment, Second Amendment, and more specifically the Second Amendment, because we need our weapons, one, to stop tyranny as well as to overturn it. And so the Supreme Court, and I think the real perspective I want to share with you is, are you happy with the conservative decisions that are being made by the Supreme Court when it seems like they're actually going, you know what? I think the progressives are giggling because they got you to dig your heels in and make sure that Kavanaugh was selected and placed onto that court. I think maybe we have been duped, and I, you know, maybe Trump was even duped, because the establishment, I mean, where's he getting these ideas? It's not like Trump knows all these lawyers. He's based his decisions upon what he's being fed. Well, you know, and when you heard people, even Mark Levin said, oh, yeah, well, Kavanaugh's a good guy. No. None of these guys are good. And as a matter of fact, we need to remake and completely redo the Supreme Court from being just a small panel of judges. We need to have a Republican representation. You got to understand that they had, during the time of the founding of this nation, they almost had one representative, or I should say, one judge for each colony, for each new state. Why is it that we do not make the changes necessary to meet the needs of the Republic and what is best for the Republic instead of what is best for the oligarchy, for those, the oligarchy of robes, the oligarchy of lawyers, the oligarchy of government? It just infuriates me. And the real problem is, are you happy with the solution, or I should say the solution provided and or what we've got? Let me get into this next story. This is the epitome of an unjust government. The city of Denver fined Jawed Bazir, a local internet business owner, after he and his staff refused to continue cleaning up after the homeless people behind his building. He said that the homeless people leave trash, drug, needles, food, and human waste in the alley where his business is located. He complained that the vagrants engaged in drug deals, prostitution, and violence. The city of Denver is following liberal policies and refuses to enforce the laws against trespassing, camping, and public defecation. Denver contends that if the trash is on Bayer's property, it is his responsibility to clean it up. That is an unjust government. The city has threatened to issue additional fines, and Bazir plans to fight the ticket in court on December 18th. Now, why doesn't this guy just move? Why doesn't he just leave? The next story, more evidence of an unjust government. Former Donald Trump campaign strategist Roger Stone, these both stories are from G. Edward Griffin, 67 years old, has been found guilty of all seven felony charges, including lying to Congress, witness tampering, and obstruction with regard to his contact with WikiLeaks. Prosecutors used Stone's own text messages and emails, some of which appeared to contradict his congressional testimony, to lay out their case that he lied to Congress and threatened a witness. Stone did not testify, and his lawyers called no witnesses in his defense. Stone was not allowed by Judge Amy Berman Jackson, an Obama appointee, to demand proof that Russia did indeed hack the DNC computers. Attorneys for Stone contended that if Russians did not hack the DNC computers, the case against Stone would have had to be dismissed. Stone is under a court-imposed gag order forbidding him from speaking publicly about the verdict or the case until sentencing February 6, 2020. Upon learning of the verdict, the president tweeted, "So they now convict Roger Stone of lying and want to jail him for many years to come. Well, what about crooked Hillary, Comey, Stroke, Page, McCabe, Brennan, Clapper, Shifty, Schiff, Orr, Nellie, Steele, and the rest of these people, and even Mueller himself? Didn't they lie?" There is hypocrisy. And when you see these types of things, when government becomes so corrupt that the corruption is just spewing over all sides of the pot, then, my friends, if we do not act, if we do not recognize that our inactions will be to our own demise, I'm here to beg, I'm here to plead to you, help us get Republic Review started now. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Mobius Strip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Mobius Strip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you.